Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync meeting for Wednesday, July 26, 2017. We have Joe, Benoit, and Theo here, along with me, Sean. And we have a couple of RFCs to vote on today. Joe, you ready to vote on RFC number 96? This is the lambda in a array literal one. I moved it to ready to vote yesterday. I'm assuming you're good with it being ready to vote.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
All right. Well then, I'm in favor.
As am I.
I'm definitely in favor.
All right. Benoit, you don't want to toss in? Not that it makes a difference at this point, unless you've got a really strong objection that you didn't raise before.
I vote yes.
All righty. Boom. Rebase and merge. Okay.
Maybe now I get to implement it.
Or somebody else does.
I've got a partially working branch already, actually.
Cool. Theo, can you do the update stuff from that?
Yep.
Yeah, you did. Shorthand now. The update stuff from that. All right. So the next one we have here is the RFC for a match iterator. This is number pull request 95 in the Pony RFC repo. This is one opened by Kevin Hoffman. And I moved it to ready to vote as it had been sitting around a final comment period for a week without any anything coming up on it. So Let's vote.
It's good to me.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
Good to me.
Benoit?
Yes, I'm so.
All right, boom. Unanimous again. Oh, shucks. All right. Kevin, welcome to the community. It took you, what, less than 3 weeks to get an RFC approved. How about that? Good job. Not that you're here, but you might be listening later. All right. Okay. Can you do that one too, Theo? All righty. Okay. So, let's see. We have a couple other RFCs here. So that folks are aware, we have Joe's more random methods RFC. If anybody hasn't taken a look at it yet. I think it's reasonable when you opened it to put it into final comment. Joe, you good with that?
Yeah, I still need to, I plan to update it, with Benoit's comments, but we can go ahead and move it into final comment period and I'll do that in a couple of days.
Okay. All right, let's see. Hold on, wait. I think I had. Okay, and so we have one other, which was opened today. Just want to bring it to folks' attention if they're listening, and folks who are here. We have the RFC to change string join to take an iterable instead of read seek. I left a couple questions on it. I'd like to see more concrete examples of it, but looks interesting to me. But we'll move on from that now. Unless I don't know, Joe, Benoit, Theo, did you have any comments on it that before we move on? This is number 98. Oh, okay. RFCs. Okay. So let's see. How about pull requests on Pony C? Let's start with. Wow, how did we get to 2084 already for pull request issue numbers?
Good year.
This is the add more promises, promise methods RFC that Theo added. Uh, I had the one thing, I don't know, did you update the join and add ones to indicate like the join is not ordered, Theo?
I have not yet, no. I need to do that.
So if you do that, then I would be I'm good with it. Other than that, you know, I when I looked at it, I was like, I don't understand the difference between join and add. And in the process of you explaining that to me, I was like, oh, that little bit about join being unordered seems like a good thing to have in the docs.
I wanted to note that it may need a rebase now that explicit partial calls is merged.
So far, it's saying that it's fine.
It probably won't, the test probably won't pass if I ran them again, so I'll make those changes.
Yeah. It would be nice if there was a way to, I could probably manually rerun other ones that we have. That's an interesting one. Okay. So, good to merge once the small doc update above is done. Probably needs an update now that explicit partial call was merged. Alrighty. Next, 2072. That's a break down the local block pool at allocator cleanup that Benoit opened. I don't know anything about the allocator. Well, I know some about it, but not enough to say anything about this particular PR other than the test path. Joe?
To explain what it does, so back when I added the thread cleanup in the pool allocator to allow the runtime to make use to reuse the memory allocated by one thread that had terminated, I added various methods of pushing local memory to a global storage, and one of those methods was suboptimal, and this PR fixes that by using a more efficient method.
It looks pretty straightforward to me. I'm okay with merging it. What about you, Joe?
I don't know that much about this section of the runtime, unfortunately, but I'm...
I know a bit, but yeah. Do you feel good merging it, Benoit, or do you want to wait for... I think Sylvan would be the other person who might have knowledge.
It doesn't fix any bugs. So if you want to wait for Sylvan to review it, then it's fine to me.
What do you want to do, Joe? Your call.
Let's go ahead and wait then if it's not pressing.
Okay. Here, let me. View this. This is me sending things to Sylvan in a fashion where hopefully he'll see them. Okay. We have 2066. Looks like we're ready to merge this. Yes. Yeah. I don't see any reason.
We were discussing about whether this needs a change log entry.
Yeah. I'm after your description, I'm good with it not having a change log. So, yeah, merge.
Yes.
Boom. All right. Okay. Next one up is uh 2064. Was this the one that we were waiting to have Sylvan look at, Benoit? Refactor receiver generation and gen call?
I think so, yes.
All right. Let me I'm just going to load him down with things. Okay. Then, all right, we got the 4.0 going on. Or, okay, this was also the add compile time check for actor pad size. 2056, were we waiting on Sylvan for that too? To review?
Yes.
Okay, let me send that to him as well. All right. Okay. That would be our PRs then, that we have. And yeah, Theo, you're gonna merge that RC after the update, right? And whatnot. The add more promise methods. Yes.
You mean the patterns?
No, your PR that's open, you're going to update the docs and then fix it to work with the partial explicit, and then you're going to merge it, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
So for under issues, let's see. Matthias opened some document generation enhancement issues, and I believe I saw them in here. Has everybody seen these the issues? There's 2080, 2086, 2080, 2087, 2088, and 2089. Has everybody seen those? Matthias, you're here. You want to, perhaps we could discuss these one at a time?
Yes, sure.
Cool.
Can anybody hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Yeah, so let's start with the one that'll drive that gets Joe's stuff up in a thing, which he did with his rant 14 hours ago. 2089, the removal of test types from the standard library documentation. Does anybody have a problem with removing that documentation, the test types?
Well, the question is, how do you know which ones are test types?
Ah, see. So everything that's under test type is faked right now. I put that in like a year or, I don't know, it was one of the first things I did when I first started working with ponies. I did some fixing up of the documentation that maybe it was either a year ago or 2 years ago. I can't keep track of time anymore, but yeah, it's basically based on the name being starting with underscore and then test, or just test. So there's no actual thing for saying this is related to tests or not. It's purely based on naming convention. So if we were to remove that, then it would potentially silently eat things. On the other hand, right now it might put things into the test category, which are not test related.
Yes. Yeah. It might be a better change to just move stuff out from the standard lib, but that might be too big of an issue. I don't know if it's impossible for everything or wanted.
To move the tests out of the standard? Out of
yes.
Well,
have some other
thing that I raised about.
Yes, exactly.
And then I would return with my usual rejoiner, which is I like being able to test private methods, but
right? Yes, sure. Yes.
This is definitely not one that we have. Let me, by the way, I just realized I should really go verify what I said. So, okay. Okay, here's what it's actually doing right now for this. Look at the code that Sean wrote. If the name begins with underscore test with a capital T, then it assumes it's a testing item. Plus, additionally, it goes through and looks for anything which is a unit test or a test list in that. If you look in docgen.c, that's lines 447 and 448. So if we wanted to do this, I'd think we'd probably want to drop. I don't remember why I put both the string comp and the check for test list and unit tests in there, but those seem like reasonable things potentially to drop. I don't know. I think it'd be. What do you think of pulling them all out and then seeing what, or maybe just the test list and unit tests based ones, removing those and seeing what's left over, and if the underscore test is still required, or I don't know, how do people feel about actually just removing them all, knowing that those are the rules? I'd be okay with trying it out, and then somebody could always report it as a bug later if this stuff gets eaten.
And if it's explicitly documented, that shouldn't be too much of a problem.
Yeah. Somebody sent a chat message. Joe sent a message saying he'd be right back. Does anybody have any strong feelings about keeping those around? Okay. Sync decision is to move these from docs, and if the test where it is also checking class name starting with test. Turned out to problem, and we can adjust.
Would it be possible to somehow mark the standard lib tests with some annotation or something like this that can be filtered out so that any class that is only test related can be moved? From the documentation more cleanly.
So the checks where it does for unit test and test list, that gets most of the stuff, but then you have support methods, right? For the test, yes. Which are not those, and if I remember correctly, that's why I put the check for underscore test as well. So it's like the vast majority of the stuff it finds, but not everything. So, So I think we have a decent chunk of that, but then it would be like, it would have to be as we would have to, if we had an annotation for something like that, or if that was a possibility, we'd have to make sure that every method, which is test related, is marked, because we get a large chunk of them right now with the AST checks, but we still need the name check in order to like filter out some other stuff. I think this is a good place to start, and we could go from there.
Okay.
Also, I have a question.
Yeah.
Is there a particular reason why private types are included in generated documentation?
Good question.
Why wouldn't they be?
I don't understand why they would be.
Well, if I'm generating, if so, here's a question. So the doc generation stuff in Pony is supposed to be usable on any project. All right.
Okay.
If it's usable on any project, if it was only on the standard library, then I would say it makes sense not to have it. If it's usable on any project, then that means I could use it on my own. And at that point, I might be exposing this for my own internal usage inside my company, at which point would not exposing the private stuff potentially make sense?
Okay, fair enough.
I mean,
maybe it should be a flag when you're generating docs. Maybe it should be a flag that says, you know, show private or don't show private. And then for the standard library, we don't.
I like
show
that idea.
That would be awesome.
I think there's actually already an issue that was open for this. We actually jumped to one of those. So, So here, let me tag the other one as. Enhancement ready for work, difficulty easy. That's a super easy one.
I don't know that if we have a flag to disable private types showing up, I don't know that we need to have a. I don't know that we need to do anything special for tests, right? Because all your test type will be private.
In theory, there's nothing to stop you from making your test public.
Right, but if they're
also
if they're
well,
public,
also the main actor is public.
What'd you say, Thea?
Also, the main actor is always public.
Right. Well,
which is like the only issue there.
Anyway.
Okay. So yeah, we could do the test type one. So do we agree though? It would be good to have a flag for whether you want to include private types or not?
I think so.
Okay. There's not actually an issue for this, so let me create a new issue. All right. Only generate docs for public types. Should be possible to create docs that only generate the. I think it makes sense to say that the public one is public only as the default, and if we're going to add an option for that, it would be to optionally add in the private ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually mentioned that in 2018.
Yeah, I'm breaking it out.
But a separate issue is.
Yeah. Pony C to generate both public and private docs. This is easy. Okay. And documentation. Okay. Issues, more issues. Are there specific ones from the 2080? You'd like to that aren't covered in the others, Matthias, before I jump to the other?
Only if there's any controversy around or something is not wanted or not possible from your point of view, like known implementing classes and sub interfaces.
Yeah, you opened a separate issue for that. So on 2080, we just discussed the create docs for public types only. What was the optionally recursively include packages and subdirectories? What's that one that you brought up in 2080?
So if you have like the net package it might be, if you have a project, it might be useful to include all the directory, all the sub packages in a documentation and not only the current one that you're pointing at in the current directory.
Does it not do
I'm actually not sure, but what it does is it includes all the documentation for every used package, like built-in and collections.
Yes.
Which is I don't know if it's what, like, when I create a library documentation, then it's not what I want actually. So maybe you can control, maybe it's possible to control this with a flag.
Yeah, I think that's certainly something. Did everybody follow along with the issue there is?
I'm not sure. Let me pull up the standard library docs. I thought they were organized by package, right?
Yeah, but so I think part of this is that when you generate documentation for an application or a library using this, it does it for every class which is included. So for example, it would, if I ran this for my application, it would include, and I used, you know, the array class, then the array class from collections in the Pony library, that documentation is going to be included in my documentation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see why that's undesirable. Okay, I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Yeah. But then if we change it not to do that, that starts to become, how do we get the correct documentation stuff to be generated, which I don't have a good answer for.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's a... yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, okay. So I can see why you'd want it to be like subdirectories based. I mean, on the other hand, I'm not sure about the output format, but is it possible to concatenate? Like if you ran the documentation generator on each directory and then concatenate the result?
I'm not following.
Never mind, it's probably not possible.
As far as I understood the code, it creates one big kind of table of contents.
Yeah.
For everything that it's iterating over. For all the packages.
Yeah. Everything in the AST. So...
If there would be a way, maybe a flag or something, to filter out the AST to only include classes and types and actors that are defined within the current directory and subdirectories, that would actually benefit creating library documentation only without having any reference to standard lib or other external projects.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, from the way the doctrine is built, I'm not 100% sure how this is possible, but I could start exploring.
You can get, for the AST for a particular type, you can get the
package file
defined in, I'm not sure what that looks like offhand, but yeah, you can get the package that it's defined in, and then presumably from that you'd have to, you know, figure out how to match it against the white list.
Oh no, oh, let's see here. Yeah, file and dir file. Oh yeah, no, package file is the other thing. I added that base dir, sub dir. Yeah, you need to get it from the AST. Sorry, I'm mumbling.
I'm not sure that the package AST has the path in it, unfortunately.
Oh, well, this is nice at least. There's already stuff in here that I did whenever I added this, Matthias, for a Boolean for whether you allow the public and private stuff. There's not one for tests, but that there's already Booleans for it, for whether they're supposed to be added in or not, at least at some levels. So I may or may not have, I'm not sure what I was thinking at that particular point in time, but yeah. Okay, so the package, if you look in the right, underscore TQFN, that's line 196, there is stuff to get the package qualified name, which might be, may or may not be potentially useful. I'm not sure. All right.
Yes. Okay.
So,
enough to get started.
Okay. Takeaway from sync, it would be good to, well, while I'm writing this up, Joe, do you want to lead us through, 2087? That's another one of, Matthias's. It's the known implementing classes / sub interfaces one. And I'll spend a little bit of time writing this up.
Sure. One second more on this issue. It looks like, yeah, the information exists in the, so the TK package AST node, yeah, it has its data links to a struct, that has information, including that package qualified name, as well as you can get the package path. So if you have the top level path that you care about, and maybe you infer that directly from the place where it was invoked, then you can recurse down, or you can do a prefix match to check if a particular package is underneath that path. That seems reasonable. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, package.c defines a function called package path that you would use instead of package qualified name. And then, yeah, you should be able to do a prefix match. Okay. So what ticket did you want me to look at, Sean?
That's 2087. You could start leading folks to that one while I try to do a vaguely decent job of writing this up well, not being super great.
Okay. So a list of all known implementing classes for each trait interface. Yeah, I could see why that would be useful. I'm not sure how it would be implemented now, but I guess if you're not too familiar with the docgen process, but if you're gathering them all up, yeah, it would it'd basically just be it's some extra recursion.
I think it would potentially be a lot of recursion.
Yes.
Yeah. But you should have enough information at that point because we've already been through the traits pass, I believe.
Yeah, so the type T, pony type T lists the traits as far as I saw, but I'm not sure about interfaces and how they are resolved or is it, if it's even possible.
Yeah, we have that full information, but only after the reachability analysis. And now, right now, the docs are generated before that pass. So we'd either have to duplicate that logic or to move the docgen after reachability analysis. But that has another downside, because the types that are included in the reachability data structure are only the types that are used in the program.
Yeah, which would make it not useful for like standard library documentation.
Yes. Okay. Yep. So.
Yeah. So we'd have to duplicate that kind of reachability logic, except for with an emphasis not on reachability, but on for every trait, iterate over the list of all types that we know about and do a check to see if it's a subtype of it. It seems like it's possible. I would maybe list it as like a difficulty medium though, because it's going to be a little bit more involved than some of these others. So
I think it won't be that hard, as I think what you could do is look over every type and every method in your AST and mark everything as reachable. So you'll have a reachability map containing every type and every method in your packages.
Okay. Yeah, I'm still going to mark it as difficulty medium just because it's not like trivial, but yeah.
Thanks for your explanation. It sheds some light on me. Appreciate it.
Okay.
If you need any more assistance, feel free to, I think you're active on IRC, or if not, yes, you know, the mailing list. Yes. We're happy to give more guidance there.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I think I have to.
Okay, I finally updated the other one. Joe, are you able to drop a little on the known implementing one for notes? Or
yeah,
I was only moderately paying attention. I heard things were like, oh yes, I know that. I had that conversation from a long time ago. So we have one more on this. 2088. This is also from Matthias, Pony Lang theme and colors. So for the everything for the documentation that's generated right now uses MKDocs and picks up whatever the default theme from that is. In theory, you could install your own for your own thing. For a theme for MKDocs, but it's certainly it's different than what that would be. If you wanted to do this one, Matthias, it would be pretty much when the docs get generated right now specifically for the standard library. It downloads and installs MKDocs as part of the Travis process that happens on release. So there would need to be theming information, which is stored like somewhere in the PonyC repo or somewhere else, which is then pulled in to replace the default theming that gets installed with MKDocs in order to do that. So it's possible. That said, I'm not a huge fan of the layout in general that MKDocs creates. So I think as part of a larger looking at the document generation that we have. We have some open tickets for being able to change the output format, right? So that you could create stuff for MKDocs or other things. I opened those a while ago, or I looked at picking them up a while ago when I first started with Pony. And we pretty much backburned that and said, we'll do this when the Pony compiler is written in Pony. So Joe has been working on that in his spare time, but it's not like do you remember like a year or two ago, Joe, how like with the timeline that you gave on that and how overly optimistic you were about the amount of free time you had in your life?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I got a 2-year-old baby, and yeah, there was a little bit of optimism there, but yeah.
I love looking back on it. It's one of my favorite things there. So we could certainly do this. I don't have any objection to changing the theme colors. it might be a little tricky just because of futzing around with stuff. If you come up with like, if you come up with a thing where you're able to generate the stuff locally, if you wanted to do this, and you come up with the theme stuff that needs to go in, I can help test it out on Travis or whatever to make sure it's working with you.
Okay. Yeah. If I have something, I just somehow publish it so you can have a look.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be reasonable. Like some screenshots on this or whatever. And
definitely.
Yes. We like this or whatnot.
Okay. And finally, some front end work.
Finally. I don't have a lot of friends who say that. So
that was just a joke.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
No. It's fine.
Yes. No, but it's for a good purpose.
Okay. We're past our usual 4 o'clock period, where we ask. So does anybody have anything that they want to, bring up or discuss on this one?
Yes, I have something. If nobody else, wants to talk about something. So, this is related to my current work on a separate compilation and eventually hot code loading and that kind of stuff. And it's about packages identifiers. And I think it would also be related to a package manager, that kind of things. So my question would be, how do we want to generate to generate packages identifier? Like, do we want the user to define the identifier based on the name of the package, or do we want to generate something based on the actual contents of the package? And if we base ourselves on the package name, could we use could we also base package managers on those identifiers? And also, how do we prevent duplicates? And if we choose the contents to generate the identifier, where do we put the line? Like, do we only base ourselves on the types and methods, or do we also want to use the implementation of the method? So I was wondering if, for example, Joe, as you're working on a package manager, if you had some thoughts on the first solution, or if anybody else has some thoughts.
So I haven't really been actively working on a package manager. Carl Quinn has been, and he's been discussing it on IRC a bit. So you might, maybe after this call or at some point, you might see if he wants to chat about it on IRC. I've been talking with him a little bit about that. So in the context of package identifiers for like incremental compilation and hot code loading, like what are the requirements in terms of like, you know, where will they be used, and, you know, does the user have to know about them, and that sort of question?
So basically, it would be used to get a unique tag on a package. Like, for example, if you compile a package foo, and then you want to use that compiled package in a program in a separate compilation, like, how do you find that package foo, and how do you make sure you're loading the correct package foo? For example, if the user moves the compiled package in another directory, then you'd have to still be able to find it, and to prevent finding the wrong package. Also, in a hot code loading, you have to be able to identify whether a given package is an update of a package you've already loaded, or if it's a completely new package. I think that's mostly what will be needed.
Okay, interesting. So, yeah, I can see why. Okay, so right now, Pony looks at packages as just being, by their location on the file system, and the names of the directories, and I can see why that is not necessarily desirable for hot code loading. It's interesting. I think I don't have any great ideas at the moment. I think maybe we should. Now that you brought it up, maybe we should kind of have a little more of a conversation asynchronously in IRC or on an RFC wherever. In terms of being able to, well, okay, so it seems like that in order to identify, a compiled binary, like you'd want to have some way of verifying. Especially with serialization, depending on it, you'd want to have some way of verifying what the content of the package is, like all the way down to, for serialization purposes, the memory layout. But I think, to your question, I think you'd probably want to have it include the implementation of methods as well, because. You want to have some way of identifying, I'm looking at the exact same package and I'm installing that on these multiple machines in my cluster or whatever, and you have some way of identifying, like, the content of them is correct. And I think that probably has something to do with, just like a some kind of hash or digest of the content. In addition to that, I mean, it does seem like you want to have some kind of global name to use when you're pulling it in with a use statement, because you've got to connect it up to that. Yeah, I think we should talk about it more in IRC and bring Carl in, because he's been. He's been looking at this question pretty deeply, I think.
We should also bring it up when we have more info with Juan to talk with Sylvan about it, because I know some of this stuff touches on some things that Sylvan and I talked about for stuff that he had thoughts and ideas on when we were first working on the serialization stuff a while ago, for things that we would change and improve for scenarios like this.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Anybody else got anything?
Yes, I do have something else.
Go for it.
It's about a comment that you, Sean, made on... One on a PR. It's 2057.
Okay.
It's a merge one. Make actor flag accesses atomic.
Oh yes, that. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to look into that yet. I was getting the the back pressure stuff that I was working on the last time I ran it, every now and then it would deadlock, and it is doing lots of it's playing around with flags and whatnot. So that was more a comment for, I need to go back and look and make sure that I wasn't assuming some level of thread safety with this, which doesn't actually exist for those. So in theory, that could explain something that I had going on, but I don't think I'm updating that from across threads, but I'm not sure.
I'm okay.
That's one of those, when I have a chance to pick up that work again, I need to go back and figure it out, because it would run fine for like an extended period of time, and then every now and then it would deadlock for reasons which are unknown to me. And when you're running with a few hundred actors and you're trying to figure out why they deadlock when you have back pressure, when you think in theory that shouldn't happen, it's a little hard to track down.
I have one thing I wanted to bring up real quick. Benoit, did you see that there was a user posted a crash report to the mailing list, and it was related to GenBox? I'm not sure if you saw that already or not, if you had any thoughts on that.
No, I don't think I saw that.
Okay.
I take a look and try to come up with a fix if I can reproduce.
Okay. The email is from July 23rd, and the title is Pony C Crash. It doesn't look like they have a minimal repro. They do have a backtrace. And it is in GenBox. And they have a public GitHub repo where you can reproduce it, I think. So, I haven't looked at it yet, but I just wanted to check and see if you had looked at it already. And I'm also getting a GenBox crash in the Pony Inspect library. That I think is related to, I mean, obviously it's related to boxing if it's in GenBox, but it's like that library does a lot of boxing because it just shoves whatever it gets into in any box. And I'll see if I can get a minimal repro for that and then post a ticket for it.
Okay, cool.
Anything else?
Not for me, and I've actually got to jump off a bit early to another call. So thanks, everyone.
All right. Have a good one, Joe. All right. You just lurking today, Gordon? You got to say hi.
Hey, you guys. How's it going?
Hey.
Sorry.
It's okay. Sorry. You don't have to bring anything up, but I felt like it would be weird to be on a call and not at least say hi.
Yeah, no, I'm just, I'm spinning up a Ubuntu machine to test the LLVM stuff on there.
Ooh, fine. I don't know if
it's failing in CI, so.
Oh, that's...
Gordon, just a status report on the LLVM4 bugs. I'm still investigating it. And it's a bit strange.
Okay.
So I don't know when I'll be able to understand what's going on.
Okay. I'll take a look at it as well. I don't promise any insight or anything, but, and also I need some help with the Mac CI because I don't have any Mac hardware.
Shoot me an email, Gordon, for what you need, and I'll try to do it this weekend.
Okay.
All right. And hopefully I don't look at me trying not to swear on a recorded thing. Hopefully I don't mess it up. I actually caught myself on that. All right. Cool. Well, if we got nothing else, then thank y'all for coming. Hey, Matthias, was this your first sync?
Yes, definitely.
welcome and joy. Hopefully we see you at others. I just want to say personally, rather than just over email or anything else, thank you. And anytime folks, you know, start like popping up with things on the mailing list, like, hey, I've done this thing or that thing, it puts a big smile on my face. So the pony check stuff, I was like, woohoo, that's an awesome beginning there. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks.
And
your help on ISC and everything made this possible. So there were many stumbling roadblocks in the way that you easily shoved away. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, we're here to help more people get going. So then we get the joy of watching them do stuff and contribute back and everything. So it's a virtuous circle. Thank you everyone for coming, and we'll see you next week. Have a good one. Bye-bye.